In the shadow of night on April 14, 2014, something unimaginable happened that sent shockwaves across the country and outraged many worldwide.
Teenage girls of the Government Girls Secondary School Chibok in Borno State abducted by suspected Boko Haram.
Footage of the Boko Haram Islamist militants moving in convoy in northeast Nigeria. This group is thought to be behind the abduction of more than 100 teenage girls from a boarding school.
276 schoolgirls from government secondary school in Chibok, northeast Nigeria, were kidnapped by the terrorist group Boko Haram. On that fateful night, the girls were preparing for the final exams when the terrorists, armed and ruthless, stormed the school, shouting and shooting sporadically as they herded the girls into waiting trucks. The Bring Back Our Girls movement was born from this collective anguish. In Nigeria, activists organized daily protests and sit-outs holding the government accountable, and the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls quickly went viral.
We have one common enemy. Our common enemy is Boko Haram. But what we're saying is that constitutionally, our government, our federal government, has the mandate for security and of life and property. And therefore, we are calling on our government in a way of accountability for the social contract that government has with citizens to play and live up to that responsibility.
And from the streets of Abuja to the halls of the United Nations, Bring Back Our Girls galvanized millions. Celebrities, activists, and political leaders joined the cause, using their platforms to amplify the girls' plight.
I'm Michelle Obama. Like millions of people across the globe, my husband and I are outraged and heartbroken over the kidnapping of more than 200 Nigerian girls from their school dormitory in the middle of the night. This unconscionable act was committed by a terrorist group determined to keep these girls from getting an education. And I want you to know that Barack has directed our government to do everything possible to support the Nigerian government's efforts to find these girls and bring them home.
The Bring Back Our Girls movement became a symbol of global solidarity, resilience, and the fight for every child's right to education and safety. The movement faced various challenges and attacks. These attacks came in the form of criticism, harassment, and attempt to discredit the movement.
I was also dubbed as the mascot of the movement with my red hijab. It became symbolic.
10 years into the Chibok girls abduction, different governments have handled it differently.
My name is Kimberly Nwachukwu, and this special report, Bring Back Our Girls, Protest to Policy, 10 Years After, recount how the movement started, explore the impact of the movement, and how it influenced significant policy change such as the Safe School Initiative.
My name is Aisha Yesufu. I am an active Nigerian citizen. April 30th, 2014 to be precise, I joined other Nigerians in making demands for Chibok girls that were abducted from their school. I was the sit-out coordinator for almost 2 years before I became the strategic team lead of the movement. Bring Back Our Girls movement started online. Quite a number of agitation, different hashtags were being used. Dr. Obiez Okwusili was very instrumental in galvanizing the necessary action needed to make demands for Chibok girls and also rallying people around the fact that girls that had gone to school to get education had been kidnapped. And so that was where it started from that 15th, 16th. So there were agitation. So that was sort of like the beginning. In terms of the name itself, it was on the 23rd of April 2014. Dr. Obiez Okwusili was at a ward as an event in Port Harcourt, and it was a live program. You know, she uttered the words "Bring back our daughters," and watching the live program was a lawyer, and he tweeted. He said he was just watching Dr. Obiez Okwusili and she had mentioned bring back her daughters, and then he added bring back her girls. So when Dr. Obi came out and she saw that bring back her girls, she was like, yes, let's use this hashtag. That was how the hashtag bring back our movement started on the 23rd. But the agitation, the demands for rescue of the Chibok girls had started, you know, before then. Then on the 30th of April 2014, that was when the first physical protest took place in Abuja. And my, oh my, it rained cats and dogs. Just as if the skies too were angry, nature was angry at the atrocity that had happened.
My name is Dr. Allen Manasse. I'm the media and communication director of the Chibok community and also the strategic team member of Bring Back Our Girls movement. I still don't get when people talk about the Bring Back Our Girls being politically motivated or the abduction of Chibok girls being politically motivated. In the first place, was there an abduction? Yes. The people that were abducted, which party or which politician are they supporting? Nobody knows them. And the people that have come out to campaign for the Chibok girls, who have profiled them to be members of a political party? When some of the people in then APC started identifying with Bring Back Our Girls, they discovered that no, this thing is a completely different thing. It has nothing to do with them. It's only single issue group calling for rescue of the Chibok girls. And they came, they saw and they discovered that no, these are people that are not for turning. These are people that are straightforward. All our agenda are open, our meeting are open. The address of Bring Back Our Girls, Unity Fountain. No headquarters, nothing. You know, it's open to anybody. Nobody is asking anybody for registration or for funding or anything. If you come, you enter Unity Fountain and you are a member, you speak your mind and the media will capture whatever you say. We filter. The only thing that we stopped anybody from doing is to go and lie and be raising money in the name of Bring Back Our Girls. We were not raising any money because we had nothing to do with money. All our t-shirt, everybody print your own. Or anybody that can print 2-3 and share with people, do it. And that was all we needed. Media was covering us free. We were not paying anything on the media.
Without the Bring Back Our Girls movement, the issue of Chibok girls would have been swept under the carpet. But with the Bring Back Our Girls movement, it made not just Nigeria, the government, but it made the world and world government also focus on what was happening within the Northeast region and what had happened to the Chibok girls. That led to a lot of actions that were taken both at home and overseas, the international community. And so we have the Safe School Initiative that came out from the movement being there. In terms of policies, there's quite a number of things that either came out or were almost supposed to come out. One of them, like missing persons register, there were some documents that the Bring Back Our Girls movement had put together, which were passed on to the government. Look, there are a lot of Nigerians who are abducted. We didn't even know the numbers were there. The Chibok girls, like we always said, were a symbol for those who were abducted before and after them. And the Chibok girls, because we had their names, we had their identities, the pictures were there, the parents were there. So they were known. You could easily say, these are the number of people that are taken. But for many people, we didn't even know that such numbers were in captivity until January 2015, when there was 6 weeks postponement of election. And then the military all of a sudden started rescuing abductees. We're like, we didn't even know this. So that as of that moment, we started preparing the missing persons register to say they needed to have a register in Nigeria where if anybody goes missing, it's reported, there is documented, and the government does everything that it can to ensure that it brings person back. Those documents were given to former President Goodluck Ebele Jonathan and then also to former President Muhammadu Buhari. They never did anything about it. And then the movement now went to Human Rights Commission and they took it on, they started working on it. And after a while, the office of the vice president, that was Professor Yemi Osinbajo, took it up and they were working on it. And it just didn't come to fruition the way we expected that it would be. We also did a plan on the Northeast in terms of reconstruction and things that needed to be done to be able to move that region. We would say probably it's also part of the things that led to the Northeast development. That's the NEDC. I'm trying to think now what other policies were there. But we as a movement, we did develop quite a number of documents. There was also the verification, authentication, reunification system that we put together to help the government to identify, verify when abductees are rescued, to be able to, identify them, verify them, and then reunite them with their families and integrate them into the society. These are some of the documents that we produced and handed over to the government.
The Greenback Our Guests design citizen charter to end terrorism. They engage the foreign embassies to support Nigeria, engage the media, and they called on every indigent to voice out. They call on the security to act and to make sure that all acts of terrorism are nipped in the bud and those that are involved are prosecuted and dealt with. What we noticed then, it was so much of blame game, lies coming from official quarters. You know, something that didn't happen, they would say it happened. Even the rescue of the Chibok girls, the military reported that they have rescued all the girls remaining eight, which was nobody was rescued. And the lies continued. You know, the blame game continued. The federal governments were blaming state. The state was blaming the federal government. There was no synergy. The military and the Air Force and the Army are no synergy. Police is out of the game. Other sister security agencies are not even in the picture. So there was completely no a coordination on the prosecution of the war on terror. And that was why the Greenback Our Guests insisted. The only thing they could do was to start treating citizens that are also victims as if they are exposing too much of government and security weaknesses. And all we got were attacks from the police, attack from thugs. They were sent at some point to beat up the members of the Greenback Our Guests, broke our cameras, broke our seats. We insisted, we continued the protest. And all we were doing was a civil movement that was self-funded. Buhari couldn't resist the heat that Goodluck Jonathan even resisted. For Goodluck Jonathan, it was initially denial. And then later, when they accepted that, yes, this thing happened, they were trying to say, okay, keep quiet, don't say it, we know that it happened, let us do it the way we wanted. But we're saying, no, this is the best way to do it, this is how to handle the parents, this is how to handle the community, this is what our soldiers need to get the girls back, to end terrorism. And we keep providing solutions, we keep exposing lies and weaknesses of the government, and it became a problem for them. But for Buhari, he could not even resist the first, second, third protest of the Greenback Our Guests. It was completely blockage of the movement. From the second protest alone, he was angry. The third one, he couldn't even say anything. You know, he addressed the people anyhow. Since then, he blocked all protests into the villa. He doesn't listen. You write, no reply. You protest, no access. But then, because there was a planned rescue attempt by some organizations before he even came into power, they later negotiated the rescue of 21 and then second H2. That was the part that government played. For this current government, allowing them to at least study all that were available for them to take action. And that was not without, you know, continuous engagement, writing, and then visiting the Ministry of Women Affairs where the Chibok Girls Desk was domiciled. But as it is, this government is also as good as deaf and dumb, not saying anything, not doing anything about the plight of the remaining 80-something Chibok Girls that are still missing.
10 years after the Chibok abduction, what has changed?
Well, a lot have changed, and then some things haven't changed, and some things have worsened. That's just what I would say. The Chibok girls, when they were taken away, 276 of them, 57 of them escaped immediately. For over 2 years, we had 219 Chibok girls in captivity. In May 2016, the first Chibok girl escaped. Her name, Amina Ali Nkeki. And as of today, we have over 82 of the Chibok girls are still the ones in captivity. And so we have over 100 that have come. So that's something that has changed. Yes, we see insecurity is still there. Those are some of the things that have not changed. Insecurity is still there. Abductions are still going on. Some of them very brutal. People have been killed. We've had lots of abduction. The government has not been able to protect our schools the way they should. They have not even made it a priority to actually protect our students in their school. And in terms of how the abduction of Chibok has affected education, a lot. No parent should be made to decide or to choose between the lives of their children or education, especially those in the rural areas where the insecurity is quite high. And so you have a lot of people who have just simply stopped sending their children to school, stopped sending their daughters to school, because part of the things that the terrorists did one was to ensure that there is no education. People don't go to school, people don't get educated. That's why they are even called nicknamed Boko Haram, meaning Western education is forbidden. And beyond that also, this is something also that happened with some of the Chibok mothers. They were blamed for sending their daughters to school. They were blamed for insisting that they wanted their children to get education so that they have better lives than they, the parents. And so you find some of them were so remorseful. Some of them were down over the fact that they are now the ones that are now being blamed for the abduction, you know, of their daughter. So education has really been affected. We have a lot of people who no longer send their children to school because they want to keep their children safe.
With the declaration of Safe School Initiative, are schools any safer?
On this Safe School Initiative, I don't think there is a school that is safe in Nigeria as it is. We've seen so many other attacks after Chibok. Exactly a year after Chibok, Dapchi happened. And had it been that Nigerian government acted rightly when Chibok happened, Dapchi wouldn't have happened. And when Dapchi happened and it was handled sharply, even after we lost some girls and Leah Sharibu was kept outside, and the terrorists were allowed to move out even after they were asked to bring the girls back. Six were not accounted for, they were dead. Leah was not accounted for, they were allowed to move. Another terrible governmental action on another school attack. Because of this shabby management of such issues of terror, they got emboldened. They now know that, okay, they can go to any length and nothing will happen to them. They went to Kankara, they went to Kagara, they went to the Baptist school in Kaduna, Zamfara, Kebbi, Sokoto. Till today, we are still counting hundreds of children, including university students, that were abducted and they are still not rescued. If the Safe School Initiative was effective and it was implemented and schools were protected, we wouldn't have gotten the report of the recent attack, even under Tinubu, that over 170. And even the report was so conflicting. The report of abduction and the report of rescue, the figures differ.
The abduction of the Chibok girls was not an isolated incident. It marked the beginning of a grim pattern. Boko Haram and later other terrorist groups continued to target schools, resulting in the killings and abduction of hundreds of students and teachers, and the destruction of school buildings and teaching materials. The effect of such attack dampened participation in education in an area where rates for girls are some of the lowest in Nigeria.
Peace is necessary for education. Many schools have been destroyed in Nigeria. Dear fellows, today I'm focusing on women's rights and girls' education because they're suffering the most. There was a time when women social activists asked men to stand up for their rights. But this time, we will do it by ourselves.
In May 2014, the Safe School Initiative was launched by the UN Special Envoy for Global Education, Gordon Brown, alongside the Nigerian Global Business Coalition for Education and private sector leaders at the World Economic Forum Africa to protect schools and students in conflict-prone areas. This was followed by the inauguration of the Safe School Funds with a contribution of $10 million by the federal government and a $10 million pledge from the private sector. Halima Ilia, National Coordinator of Financing Safe School Initiative adds more context.
The Safe Schools Initiative was actually launched to address the issues of victims of attack. That was the Chibok incidents where 276 children were abducted. I think that was just to address that issue. So in 2019, the federal government signed the Safe School Ratification Document, signaling the country's commitment to its implementation, where we have 118 member countries. And the issues of safe schools, attacks on education, was reoccurring for a lot of stakeholders. In 2019, the Ministry of Finance convened a high-level meeting to chart a way forward on how to address the issue on a more holistic and sustainable basis. So in that meeting, the UN envoy, that is Golden Brown, was in the meeting with other partners. So it was resolved at Ministry of Finance to develop a compact, a costed plan for the country. In 2022, the Secretariat in Finance was set up and was saddled with the responsibility to develop a national plan under my leadership. So we pulled members from critical agencies. We have members from the Nigerian Governors Forum, Nigerian Police, Ministry of Education, the DSS, NSCDC, and the Defense Headquarters. The headquarters representing the Defense Intelligence Agencies and the entire Nigerian Armed Forces. Mm. So we came together and developed a national plan between 2023 to 2026. The plan itself has a total investment size of 144.8 billion. So the plan was actually launched in 2022, December, alongside with other policy documents, that is the minimum standard on safe schools. So this plan was launched in Ministry of Finance by the two ministers from Education and Finance. So by 2023, we started implementation. We're able to establish and flag off the first National Response Coordination Center, that is the first in Nigeria, manned by all the security agencies. The essence of that Safe Schools Coordination Center is to disseminate information and also for quick response. And we intend to replicate same at the state level and at the local government level to integrate the centers to the national center. And federal government gave provision or released 15 billion to the implementing agencies for implementation. So where we are currently is the security agencies have mainstreamed safe schools, which is the first phase of implementation, have built capacity of their personnel across the country.
I paid a visit to the Nigerian Police Force headquarters in Abuja to get some insight on how the School Protection Squad operates.
My name is CP Basil Idegu. I'm the police coordinator of the School Protection Squad. The School Protection Squad was inaugurated by the Inspector General of Police on the 9th of August 2023, along with the standard operating procedure. We are starting off with 17 most impacted states of the Federation. After that, it will graduate to other parts of the country. The idea of the School Protection Squad is what we call a whole society approach to security. The schools have a role to play. The host communities have a role to play. The host community, we're talking about such stakeholders as vigilante members, hunters, forest guard, and just major stakeholders in the communities. They have a role to play because they see what we don't see, they hear what we don't hear, and so their duty is to work hand in hand with the security personnel to ensure that there is security for those schools in their domain. At the moment, we have done the training of the national coordinators, the DPOs. We are now training personnel. We are going to embark on a physical aspect of the training very soon. We are taking them to the mobile training school where they will be trained on how to counter acts of terrorism. They will improve their shooting capacity at the shooting range and all other trainings that will enable them to respond effectively to high intensity acts of terrorism. The IG came up with the use of technology to reach to the security personnel. The technological device will be placed in schools where those devices can be activated whenever there is any emergency or distress call. And then that call will be received at the command and control center. and then for quick response of security personnel. We have equipped some of the states the much we can. We still need funding to make sure that if we're having three teams per state, they should be mobile, they should be well equipped, they should be well trained, and this requires a lot of financial administration. So in that aspect, we still need more to be able to set up the teams and make sure that they are able to respond to any emergency.
After a brief demonstration of how the command control center of the Safe School Squad works, I sat down with a technical partner to learn more.
My name is Engineer Steve Olu, the chairman of Police BGS in Nigeria. So we have been choosing a technical partner to the Nigerian Police Force on Safe School Initiative. So we have a couple of equipment already installed in different schools, in different states presently. For pilot scheme, we have 18 states already. Presently, we cover FCT, Kaduna, Niger, Ondo, Ekiti Delta, Imo, Zamfara, Katsina, Plateau. And in covering all these states, of course, we have a lot of challenges. Because there are some areas, if I can only go there, only with the military. The EDG has vacated the whole area. Children cannot go to school in those areas. They have turned the school to something else. But so far, so good, with the help of the IGP, Kayode Egbetokun, is so poised to make sure the safety of our children is being placed at the highest level. The installation is still ongoing. If anything happens in those states, we see it in 5 seconds of the incident.
So you're saying in 5 seconds from when it's reported?
I can assure you, if anything happens anywhere in those places that has been reported, 5 seconds, we get it here in helicopter, IG will be seeing it, all the security agencies will be seeing it, and I can assure you, they will respond. The response is what we're after, instant response. We have a system, even where there are no network, immediately install there, you see whatever is happening, and you can report to our office in 5 seconds also. Under 5 seconds, it will geolocate you, the coordinate will be shown to us here, we can listen to what's happening to you, we know your address, and at the same time, we can see you by visual, we know what's happening. If the network is so bad, the visual might delay, but the voice will be heard here, and at the same time, of course, the coordinate will be known. Even sometimes, if it's showing an unknown location, maybe it's not on the Google Map or whatever, what we are getting here, on our system for response team, they have a system in their vehicle, which is the responder. They just need to click start. And that start will navigate them to wherever you are.
Since the Chibok abduction in 2014, bandits and terrorist groups have kidnapped over 1,000 students, and these attacks have had a devastating impact on the education system. Efforts to address this issue through initiatives like the Safe School Initiative are crucial, but have faced significant challenges due to ongoing insecurity and logistical difficulties. 10 years after Chibok abduction, the fight continues as many of the girls are still missing. The resilience of the survivors and the determination of those fighting for justice offers a glimmer of hope. Nigerian children deserve a future free from fear, where education is a beacon of light. This report is dedicated to the memory of the lost, the bravery of the survivors, and the enduring hope for a safer future for all children. A special thank you to the Wole Soyinka Center for Investigative Journalism.